Is to the 18th chapter of John's Gospel. John chapter 18, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired Word of God. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where was a garden, into the which he entered, and his disciples. And Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus oft times resorted thither with his disciples. Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus saith unto them, I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. As soon as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. Then asked he them again, Whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he. If therefore ye seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which he spake, Of them which thou gavest me, have I lost none. Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it, and smote the high priest's servant, and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Then said Jesus unto Peter, Put up thy sword into the sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it? Then the band and the captain and officers of the Jews took Jesus and bound him, and led him away to Annas first, for he was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was the high priest that same year. Now Caiaphas was he which gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple that Jesus was known unto. That disciple was known unto the high priest, and went with Jesus into the place, the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, Art not thou also one of this man's disciples? He saith, I am not. And the servants and officers stood there, who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold. And they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. The high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and of his doctrine. Jesus answered him, I spake openly to the world. I ever taught in the synagogue and in the temple, whither the Jews always resort. And in secret have I said nothing. Why askest thou me? Ask them which heard me what I have said unto them. Behold, they know what I said. And when he had thus spoken, one of the officers which stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, Answerest thou the high priest so? Jesus answered him, If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why smitest thou me? Now Annas had sent him bound unto Caiaphas, the high priest. And Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. They said therefore unto him, Art not thou also one of his disciples? He denied it, and said, I am not. One of the servants of the high priest, being his kinsman, whose ear Peter cut off, saith, Did not I see thee in the garden with him? Peter then denied again, and immediately the cock crew. Then led they Jesus from Caiaphas into the hall of judgment. And it was early, and they themselves went not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out unto them and said, What accusation bring ye against this man? They answered and said unto him, If he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him up unto thee. Then said Pilate unto them, Take ye him and judge him according to your law. The Jews therefore said unto him, It is not lawful for us to put any man to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spake, signifying what death he should die. Then Pilate entered into the judgment hall again, and called Jesus, and said unto him, Art thou the king of the Jews? Jesus answered him, Sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell it thee of me? Pilate answered, Am I a Jew? Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What hast thou done? Jesus answered, My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight, that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. Pilate therefore said unto him, Art thou a king then? Jesus answered, Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Pilate saith unto him, What is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again unto the Jews, and saith unto them, I find in him no fault at all. But ye have a custom that I should release unto you one at the Passover. Will ye therefore that I release unto you the king of the Jews? Then cried they all again, saying, Not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. All right, so the first section I have that is verses 1 through 12. We have Jesus in the garden, Judas knowing that place. Notice that there is a brook there. It's beyond that brook. The brook here is spelled C-E-D-R-O-N, Cedron, which is the same as the brook Kidron, which was that valley that lay just outside of Jerusalem and really served as a place, in some cases, of the, the brook Kidron received all the refuse of the city. There were times when they cleaned out all of the idols and they cast them all into the brook Kidron. There was another place just a little beyond Kidron. It was a valley, and that valley was called Gehenna. You've heard the term Gehenna, no doubt. Gehenna, geographically, was a little bit beyond Kidron. And what it was a place of burning salt pits, and they would also pour their trash in it, and they had like a trash dump out there. And so Gehenna became the model, the metaphor for the everlasting fires of hell. And that's why sometimes Gehenna is used in place of hell or any other word like that in that word group. Okay, so there was another place just beyond the brook Kidron, and you can go there today. It's still there. It's the Mount of Olives and the Garden of Gethsemane that is indeed at the base and kind of moving up halfway up that mount there, which is over against Jerusalem with the brook Kidron in the middle of that valley between Jerusalem and the garden. Geographically, that all of those features are still there. And you can see that. And if you've ever, I'm going to reveal my own geekishness here. If you ever go on Google Maps and look at that area like I have, you'll see that all of that stuff is still there. So, moving on, he says. Jesus goes to that garden. It was a place where he went often. It was a retreat out of the city. He was unmolested there. He would spend hours in prayer and in meditation. It was a quiet place. He went there, and Judas had some good idea that he would have retreated there in their search for Jesus. That would have been one of the first places that they would look. And so Jesus, knowing that his hour is come, facilitates that meeting by going there. He's not hiding out, in other words. He recognizes that his time has come, and so he goes across the Kidron there and sets up in the Garden of Gethsemane. Judas has received the band of soldiers from the chief priests and the Pharisees. They come with their weapons, with their torches. John does not record the betrayal of Christ with a kiss. That's left for the other gospel records. And in this particular instance, we see perhaps some of those clues that help us to understand how it is that John's gospel is somewhat dependent upon the other gospels and after them. It comes in after, as far as the chronology of writing, because there are some details that John simply assumes you already know, and then some details that would have been safer to be released at the end rather than at the beginning. Notice that this is the only gospel where it says that it was Peter that drew the sword and cut off Malchus's ear. Luke's gospel, Luke being the doctor, records that Jesus healed his ear. John doesn't record that. So you see these little nuanced differences between the gospels help to fill in a complete narrative, and they give a certain style and certain perhaps chronological differences that we would not otherwise see, which adds to the verity of the narratives, right? It doesn't add to, in other words, if they're exactly the same, the critics would call collusion. If they're not exactly the same, the critics call mistakes and errors. And, of course, the common denominator there is that critics will not be convinced either way. This adds credibility to the narrative in that there are some differences between them. So they come to Christ and they say, Jesus just walks right out in front of them and he says, "Whom seek ye?" They say, "Jesus of Nazareth." Literally, he answers, "Ego eimi." Some scholars have made a really big deal of what Jesus does here, that he is using the divine name. I read last night from Dr. Elwell in the Encyclopedia of Christian Theology. Elwell says that this is one of three instances in the Gospel of John where it's obvious that Jesus is using the divine name according to its divinity. So he says, "I am." They hear that and they fall backward and hide behind the rocks, it seems. In other words, there's something about what Jesus said that evoked a certain amount of fear in them, such that while they had so many there and Jesus was standing by himself, that when he answered them, "I am," they went backward and sheltered themselves. Jesus asks again, and this second time he uses the same words, "I am," but notice in every instance in your King James Version, the word "he" is added in italics because that term "ego eimi" can also mean, "Yeah, I'm here, it's me. I am he." That's right. I'm the one you're seeking. The "he" would be understood in that. So, either way, there is something of fear that these soldiers have of Christ, such that they would fall backward when he answers, or when he asks them, "Whom seek ye?" They say, "Jesus," and he says, "That's me," and they fall backward. So there is indeed something of the guilt that they know that they're doing wrong because they have fallen backward away from Christ rather than thinking of him as who he as a criminal, a common criminal that they would have no fear of. All right, so then that's when Peter reaches out and, he gets Malchus. Of course, Malchus, there's just a very short distance between your ear and your neck. It's pretty obvious that Peter was not aiming for the ear. He was aiming for the neck. And Malchus, like one preacher that I say, he just had good reflexes. He kind of bent his head over and he got the ear instead of the neck, and Jesus healed him. And then Jesus immediately turns to Peter and speaks of his obedience to the Father. Because that's what Jesus has come to do. He's come to obey his Father. And he is undeterred from that obedience. Even though now, here it is, although John doesn't record it, just a few moments before, Jesus was wrestling in prayer and ended that prayer with what? "Not my will, but thine be done." So we see Jesus as that covenant son, perfectly obedient to the will of his Father. All right, so then here we have this second section, which contains Peter's denials, verses 13 through 27. John was also identified as a disciple, but notice it was Peter that denied. John continually, in two occasions, refers to himself in this narrative as the other disciple. John being that humble man that never names himself, nor even his brother's name in this gospel, James and John, the sons of Zebedee. And so both James and John go unnamed in the Gospel of John because of John's evident humility. And so he just speaks of himself here as the other disciple. But note that he was known to the high priest. So John was connected in high places in the Jewish religious hierarchy. John was. And so John is the one who has the maid open the door for Peter. And she says, "Oh, I saw you. You were with him. You're a Galilean. You're one of his disciples." And that's when Peter denies. And then twice more, Peter denies. Of course, in John's gospel, we don't have that scene where Jesus gazes at Peter across the courtyard when Peter makes his third denial. But we know that happened because it's recorded elsewhere. Here we have that after Peter's third denial, the rooster gives his sound, and that prophecy that Jesus had earlier uttered that evening comes to pass. Peter denies three times. This also begins the conversation between Jesus and his accusers, and this is when Jesus is struck. I suppose what is most important to understand there is that the high priest had become such a powerful office in Judaica in those days that when he asks a question, that he was always used to receiving a respectful and humble answer. Jesus does not answer sinfully at all, but he also does not answer with the kind of humility that the high priest is used to hearing. And so the servant of the high priest reaches out and just pops Jesus one in the face for his response. Jesus, for his part, answers quite justly when he says, "Instead of hitting me in the face, what you should do first is accuse me of the evil that I've done." In other words, we don't punish people before we have understood certainly proven the evil that they've done. We don't rush to a punishment. But that's what this man did. He reached out because he perceived that Christ's response was less respectful than it should have been. Jesus obviously disagreed with that and asked him to bring up any charge that he might. "Answerest thou the high priest so?" is all that he was given. "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why smitest thou me?" Of course, we also have this perversion of the office of the high priest, in that in those days in Jewish history, we'll not go into the details, but because it was thought to be way too much work for one guy to be the high priest by himself, they had divided that office into two. And notice that it was father-in-law and son. Notice that? In other words, they had left the proper bounds of hereditary sons of Aaron Levitical succession. They had left that. It's father-in-law, not father to Caiaphas. Whereas that would not have been lawful in its original establishment. All right, so then from Caiaphas, then they go to the Hall of Judgment. Now, the Hall of Judgment is run by whom? Well, it's run by the Romans. And so to go into a Gentile home would be to risk becoming unclean, and that with the Passover looming. And so they would not risk that. They would not go in unto the judgment hall where Pilate was. And so they don't start out really on the right foot with Pilate. They make Pilate rise up and come out to meet them, when normally if they had a petition, they would have gone into him and presented themselves before him. Again, while they didn't have any difficulty themselves disrupting the proper order with regard to Pilate, when Jesus spoke up in the midst of their meeting, they popped him in the mouth. So you understand the hypocrisy and how far that is going here. So Pilate does come out to meet them, and I love the original interaction. "Why have you brought him to me?" Pilate says. And here's their answer. "If he wasn't a malefactor, we wouldn't have brought him anyway. Just trust us on this." Right? That's the point that they're making. You're a governor. We're involved in government. We know a malefactor when we see one. So we should get a little professional courtesy here. You should simply take our word for it and receive him as a malefactor, as a rabble rouser, as a bad guy. And so Pilate, not willing to do that, takes him in and is going to examine him himself. First of all, he tells them, however, he understands what's going on when they say, if he was not a malefactor, we wouldn't have brought him. And he says, okay, all right, I get what you're saying. You take him and judge him according to your law. Thank you very much. I don't want to get involved. Right? I mean, Pilate, all throughout this, although his non-involvement is really blameworthy, he should have protected Christ from the wicked ones that wanted to put him to death. He doesn't. He rather hands Christ over to them sinfully, not protecting, not doing his job as a good civil magistrate. But they say, well, we can't put him to death. And when he hears that, he says, okay, he must really be a malefactor. You must really have some accusation against him. And notice also that if the Jews would have put him to death, there's only one other instance in the New Testament where we have the Jews doing that, and that's in the 7th chapter of the book of Acts with Stephen. And what was the method? Stoning. What did Jesus say about his death? That he would be lifted up from the earth, which means what? That he would be crucified, which means what? That the Romans would be the ones to put him to death. At the hands of the Jews, right? At the behest of the Jews. Now let's not get this confused. The Bible is very clear that it was the Jews that put Christ to death. Yes, it was with Roman hands, and it was by a Roman method, but it was most certainly the Jews that delivered him up. Okay, so moving on then, Pilate brings him into the judgment hall and begins to ask him questions. Art thou the king of the Jews? And then there's this interchange between Pilate, and Pilate shows himself a bit impatient with the Jews generally. I'm sure they were not what you would call model subjects to the Roman occupying force. And so Pilate expresses, he's already been roused out of his chambers to go and to meet them early outside so that they wouldn't be defiled. He's catering to them. He's kind of put out by the whole thing, it seems. Which again, does not speak well for Pilate. His own frustration comes out when he says, am I a Jew? Your own people have delivered you up to me. All right, so then Jesus begins to speak to him about the truth. Notice that Jesus is always, always teaching. Always, always bearing those opportunities or making use of those opportunities. And so when he says, You say I'm a king, for this cause came I into the world. And then he goes on to add what a king should do, and that is to bear witness to the truth. And that's when Pilate asks the fateful question of the skeptic that many ask today. What is truth? What is truth? Thankfully for us, we've already answered that question in our last reading. John 17 says, sanctify them in the truth, thy word is truth. We already know the answer to that question. Pilate obviously doesn't know the answer to the question. It is not a lack of evidence that keeps people from receiving the Bible as truth. It is frankly a will problem that they will not receive the Bible as truth. So then, this is when Pilate comes out and he recognizes that Jesus is not a threat to the community. He's not a threat to the Roman government. He's not even a threat to the Jews. He's not a rabble-rouser. He's not an incendiary. And so he has no problem at the Passover, where the custom is him to release a prisoner to the Jews, to releasing Jesus, who is called the King of the Jews. The people, however, are having nothing of that. They would rather have Barabbas instead of Christ released to them. So they choose a murderer over the Prince of Life. They choose a rabble-rouser and a breaker of the peace over the Prince of Peace. And this shows the wickedness of that first century Judaic establishment. All right, thus ends the reading of John chapter 18. Let's stand and call upon the Lord in prayer.